every single day I feel
it. Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double out the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back, welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. Man, we're doing it up, man. We're crushing it. I actually am leaving for Jamaica tomorrow, so we have tried to like get as many things in as possible in the 2 days. I'm a kind of guy that likes to take time and shrink it. So Monday, Tuesday, 7 podcasts in 2 days, jamming. I don't think a lot of people do things like I do. It's like, and I learned from some of the greatest in the industry at marketing and exposure. And I got a guy today who's done a really great job with that too. This gentleman has over 360,000 followers on Twitter, 450,000 followers across the social media platforms. He's ran into me now, which I'm going to show him how to 10X that, 12X that, 100X that. By the way, Clint, I'm going to introduce you here more in a second, but I just have this way about me to elevate people even further. And I just have all this knowledge and I cannot wait to share some things with you. After this, yeah. I'm going to share some things with you. But anyway, Clint Murphy's in the building. He's a husband and father to 2 young boys. I'm not sure if their ages, 15 and 12 still, but this bio says 15 and 12. By day, he's a chief financial officer for a real estate development company and an avid real estate investor himself. He started taking content creation seriously only 4 years ago, August 2020, somewhere around there. So he gained that massive following in a short amount of time. You can too, folks. So listen up. We're going to find out how he did it. And Clint is also the host of the Growth Guide podcast, which started as a hobby in 2020 during the pandemic, like a lot of us, and celebrated his 100th episode in 2023. Most recently, he started the weekly Growth Guide newsletter in February 2023 and already has 20,000 avid readers. Dude, let's get into it, man. Welcome to the show, Clint.
Thank you. Great to be here. Looking forward to having this chat with you.
Yeah, dude, let's do it, man. I have a famous question, and it's written on the wall behind me in case I forget. What are you made of?
The number one answer that comes to me is fire. And, you know, my motto on life has always been, I attack. Whatever I'm doing, and it sounds like you take a similar approach, I just attack and drive relentlessly forward. And I think, Mike, that comes from a life growing up with no money, growing up with lower middle class family, and always wanting, always seeing other people having things and not understanding that I was intelligent, thinking, you know, my lack of money, my poorness, my ADHD, like that was all tied to not being intelligent. And so always having this desire and the youngest of 3 kids with a brother who was held back in grade 1 and so was in the same grade as me my entire life and was a
holy cow.
Are we allowed to swear here? Because he was giant, right?
This is a wide open show, by the way.
Like imagine the kid that would have been the biggest kid in his class. Now you pull him back a grade and that's my whole life. So I was always just driven. I wanted more. I wanted to prove myself. I wanted to prove myself to, you know, you don't realize this till you're older, Mike. I wanted to prove myself to my father. I wanted to prove myself to the people who said I wasn't good enough. And I've never lost that edge. I think that I've shaped it with meditation and mindfulness, and it's a little more controlled now, but fire and aggression is what I'm made of.
Dude, I gotta pause for a minute. This show's so like, we do whatever the hell we want here. You just made me think of something, and I just gotta send this to my partner, because you know, when I'm an active listener, so, and I try to get, when I listen to other people, I try to like reflect upon what I'm doing or what I have done or what state I'm in currently. Mm-hmm. And you just made me think of something, which I'll share with you guys in a second. But I take time out of the equation, so I don't want to forget.
I love it.
So listen, man, fire is something I haven't heard from people in that question. I hear a lot of the same answers. Fire is not one of them. And I want to point something out. I created a brand called That One. There's a little one hidden here on my shirt. I have the shirt on today. And CFOs and people that are in the number game and the finance game, a lot of times aren't like you. And what you've done with your following and the growth and that fire has differentiated you. Mm-hmm. And I've figured out already one of the main things and reasons you're having success is because you differentiated yourself.
Yes.
Do you find that as well?
Yeah, I always talk to young people when they say how do I become more? How do I earn more? Because we all know if you want to be wealthy, if you want to differentiate yourself, you have to stand out from the crowd. And I always talk, Mike, about this idea of rare skills. And so I come from a background that's analytical. I come from a quantitative background. Now, I only did that. My wife, back when we were in college, when we were kids, said, hey, do something to get you a job. I was going to be in psychology and English. And said, sure, I'll be an accountant. But what I realized over time is that you want to develop what we call rare skills. And so you want to take skills that you generally don't see paired together. And for me, that became things like public speaking, writing content, delivering stories, and combining that with quantitative skills. So now you have that ability as an accountant or as a CFO to take a very complex topic and make it simple and then convey it to the audience in written or spoken word. And when you can do that, you stand out as someone who's different than the average CFO. And it gives you opportunity, gets you to earn more, and then you can turn that earnings into even more wealth generation over time, which has been the goal.
Yeah, and communication is powerful.
Yes.
To the degree you can communicate, you can be successful, you can relate to people, you can build network, community. And the thing about it is communication's in a lot of forms. There's obviously nonverbal communication, there's written, there's content, like video content, and you're doing it. And I think this is phenomenal, and I want to dissect this more. So let's get into your story first, and then I have all kinds of questions. I mean, but let me tell you what I'm going to tell my partner. So this fire that we have, right? There's times where you have to dampen it because
that's right.
We tend to get dispersed with our attention, like you just said, which is okay, because I think it's important to find your meaning and purpose and mission. You have to like scatter it away around a little bit to find that thing or those things. But then there's times where you have to get narrowly focused and really hyper intentional and hyper focused on something to hammer that. And so I'm in a state right now where I'm really hyper focused, and I have people all around me bringing me, like, since my following's grown substantially over the last 5 years, same thing. I have people coming to me all the time, and you probably are similar, with ideas and opportunities and all this. And it, for us, for people like us, it's very easy to get off track. I'm in a state right now where I'm very hyper-focused, and that's something I want to talk to my partner about. I still have this fire inside of me, and I'm always like suppressing it in a way and redirecting it, not suppressing, but redirecting it into this focus right now.
Yes.
Instead of being all over the place. So that's what I gotta share that and then see how we can get, like, you know, leverage that. But I want to get into your story. Way back, you know, being in the same grade as your brother, like, give us some specific stories that you went through, and I don't care what age it is, but like that were kind of catalytic.
Oh, wow. I mean, an early catalyst for me was when I was young, 4 or 5 years old, we always debate what it was. I was chasing my brother. He wanted to go to a friend's. He wanted to leave without me. I'm that older generation where, you know, your parents aren't really watching you. And he took off. I tried to follow him on my bike, and I ended up getting hit by a car. And back then, you know, you're not wearing helmets, you're not paying attention. So, you know, what that did, that was the first concussion of many, Mike. And for my life, I think that's tied into things like ADHD. It's tied into things like depression when I was older, and leading to a phenomenon that when you suffer a lot of concussions, they call it anger discontrol. And all of these things, and that is that your anger relative to a stimulus is disproportionate to that stimulus. So all of those things, you know, ultimately led me down the road to working with a concussion specialist in my early to mid 30s, and learning about meditation, learning about Buddhism, learning about loving kindness, and starting to understand the emotional or human side of it. Because when you're a very logical person, and I'm logical by nature, and you're very driven and you're full of fire, you tend to be the type of person that's just always pushing. And you're not only pushing yourself, you're pushing everyone around you. And that has some benefits, but as a leader, you're not reaching your full capability. And then when you're able to pair that fire, so I know when we need to push, but you're able to pair that with the empathy side and say, hey, wait, like I actually have to care about the person. I have to care about their feelings. I have to recognize, hey, there's a time to push. There's a time to say, hey, what's going on in your life? Can we have a conversation? Because you seem like you're not yourself. So that was interestingly, I'd never even paired up that catalyst when I was young to actually having a positive impact on my life. I've always looked at the downsides of it, but ultimately that led to a positive things. The growing up, there was a lot of moving. So there was a lot of, my dad back then was an alcoholic. You know, you might still say he is. He hasn't drank for 35 years, but so there was never any steadiness. And what has that meant for my life is part of the fire, right? Is part of the every 2 years, 7 months, I left a job. Like I just couldn't stay in a job. I couldn't stay in a house. The longest I've ever lived in a home is 5 years. And that creates stress on my relationship. My wife's very stressed about that, but it's been a catalyst to always be moving forward. Like what's the next bigger house? What's the next bigger thing? What's the next bigger job? Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. And then most of the catalysts after that, because the other catalysts, they were just longstanding, right? I couldn't afford those nice Nikes. I couldn't get that nice pair of jeans. I couldn't get that nice food, clothing, whatever it was. I couldn't afford it. And did that mean I probably started working at a younger age than the average person? Probably. I mean, you know, the newspaper route when you're a kid and then baling hay on farms when I was 12 years old. That led to McDonald's when I was probably in grade 10 or 11. That led to working as a server, working in warehouses as a laborer. I did chicken catching for a night. I delivered bread when I got my class one with air so I could drive rigs. I delivered bread for a week or two. I became a teller. So in reality, I haven't not been employed since I was about 15 years old. And prior to that, I had summer jobs for the 3 years before that. So I have always been working. I resigned from my job in December. I finished as an employee on the 15th of last month and became a contractor at that point and am now building some businesses. I'm 45 now, Mike. So that means I have not had unemployment for the last 30 years. And so this is the first time that I haven't been employed. And other than being employed by my own company, when we scale enough and we start taking salary instead of just dividends, I will never be employed again. So that was a catalyst, right? That lack of money. And to the downside, that catalyst may have led me to not pull the trigger sooner because of a fear of getting back to, I'll be poor again. And it's possibly a combination of that and a combination of a wife who's very risk averse. Even though I'm fiery and entrepreneurial, I've held that back for 25 years, made a good income, grown until the point where I couldn't contain it and said, hey, enough's enough. I've got to start building. And that's when you see me starting the podcast. That's when you see me starting on social media, is me saying, hey, I got to get out. I got to make a change. And we're going to get started now so we don't go from 100 to zero when I do make the change. We go from 100 to something.
Yeah, and there's also a time where you may have to go from 100 to 50.
Exactly.
Like a rubber band gets pulled back so that you can really blast off. Have you noticed that too since you let go like of the job or what have you?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I look at it, some of the partners that I'm going to be working with, you know, we want to get some contract work. We want to bring in some fees. And I have a bit of a different approach. I'm willing to just draw down on my savings. You know, I have a certain amount of retirement savings that I've built up. I've been very focused on it. And I would rather just draw down on my retirement savings so we could 100% focus on building the business than going out and getting contract work for the business. Because if we're getting contract work, we're selling our time for money, which isn't really different than when we were employees. Now, you know, it's probably the first time I'm saying it out loud to anyone. So for my partners who may hear this podcast, hey, you know how I feel on this one. But the, you know, if you're going to grow and scale a business, you have to recognize that in the early years, it'll be lean. And I still think the right thing to do is to do that versus going out and getting contract work, which is making money for other people.
Yeah. And it's so easy to fall into that thing where like, oh man, we got this information. We can make money, contract work. I'm so aligned with you. It's not even funny. And it takes a hit to your ego when you start seeing your net worth drop.
Yeah.
But you got to really realize that it's not spent money. It's invested money. We're investing, yes, whether it's real estate, whether it's in ourselves, whether it's our business. You really got to start understanding when you go through this, look, your ego is there to keep you safe. But beyond that, it is a hindrance. And net worth only matters really like at the end of the, I still think our net worth, like financially, when we do this and we draw down on our assets, what have you, like you can't measure what you're investing in yourself and your business until later on, right? It's still there. Mm-hmm. Nobody can take that from you. And you invest in your business, which you're starting right now. And I'm 2 years into that one agency, which is similar to what you're doing as far as investing in that. Nobody can take that away from you.
That's right.
So, you know, I love what you're doing. Just to let you know, I know sometimes when you're by yourself, you're like, shit, man, what the hell? I wake up some mornings like, what the hell am I doing? You know, and I have really close friends I grew up with, I was in the business with, and we're growing apart now. And there's that emotion as well. Have you had any relationships, one that the fire that you have has driven people away from you? They just didn't get it, right? And from their perspective, and then two, relationships from not just the fire, but what you're doing now when you decided to go out and do this thing that you're doing now, like, have you had to leave some relationships behind and they just didn't get it?
Yeah. For sure on the first one, you know, as you grow, I grew up in a pretty small town outside of, you know, the city core, like 18,000 people there when I was growing up. And now I live right in the city, and that fire always had me wanting more, always had me pushing to be the best I could be and to be driven. And so I would say the relationships that I built while I was young, most of those have somewhat disappeared. The closest relationships I had were with a few guys at KPMG who started in the same year group I did. And the interesting thing, Mike, was you take 30, 40, 50, 60 new students that have been hired, you throw them away at a nice little hotel a couple hours outside the city on a beach, and you give them 1 week of getting shit-faced together while going to seminars during the day to bond them, right? To build the relationship. And there were two guys specifically, there were a few more, but there were two guys specifically. And the three of us identified each other as, I see something in you that I see in me. And those are my two closest friends today. That was 24 years ago. One of them is the CFO for the largest real estate development firm in our city. And the other is leading a practice for KPMG Canada, right? Like, so that fire that I had, they had. And so finding that fire and seeing people that had it, even though I've shifted direction, you don't lose that because they see my fire just going in a different direction. And so those you keep. Some of those other relationships you build at the same time, where over time you see they don't have the fire as you, they drop off. And they don't just drop off for me, they drop off for the other two guys who have that same fire. They may even drop up for them first. They'll often say to me, you hold on longer than we do. You hold out hope that their fire is your fire, but it's not. And so they drop, then eventually I'm like, you guys were right. And I let go. And where I've picked up some is through the socials. And you get this because you start having those DM conversations And then you start building a relationship on a Zoom call. And then you say, hey, let's meet up for that conference that's happening in Florida. Let's meet up for that conference in California. And you build a relationship with someone that you might go 2 years and you're talking almost every day. And then you see the person for the first time in life 2 years later. And you're like, oh shit, like, good to see you. Like, you're one of my closest friends now, and I've never actually met you. And so I've picked up some good friends that way. And I'm looking forward to doing more of that as I pivot. I haven't really talked about an area of life that I'm going to really be focused on over the next, well, the rest of my life. And that's the area that I work. I work in real estate development, but I never felt comfortable talking about it too much because I was employed by someone. It didn't feel right to be sharing what I'm doing for their company while I'm in it. But now that I'm out and I'm going to stay involved in real estate the rest of my life, I'll be sharing more of that, Mike, and be building relationships there. I didn't necessarily lose anyone on the social journey. But before we started, you and I talked about that loneliness. What I did get a big sense of, you know, you always write the platitude. At first, they laugh at you. They make fun of you. Then they start to take interest. Then they start asking you questions. And then at some point, they say, I knew that guy when. And there was a lot of that. Like, it's even your family, right? Like, they have no
idea. Holy shit. That's what I call the hater cycle. I wrote about that same exact thing, and those steps in my book, Rocket Fuel Convert Setbacks Become Unstoppable, that's what I call the hater cycle. And you know, some people stop when people start hating on them or throwing little digs, discouragements, unintentional, subconsciously they're doing it, right? They're not trying to be bad people. And you have to understand this cycle, because if you understand this cycle and you just keep pushing through, it's so rewarding at the end.
100%. And you can't stop. You know, and it's even your spouse, it's your friends. And probably, I mean, I started serious on the podcast on the Twitter, August 2021. So we're coming up on 3 years. The podcast was 2020. And I remember my wife, the first time someone paid me to do something, you know, maybe it was retweeting their content. It was someone who wanted me to advertise something for them. And she was like, oh, you know, there was just that head twist. Like, oh, there is something there. You know, small. But then all of a sudden you're getting that every month. And it's like, And when I knew it was real, Mike, was because I'd been talking about how I was going to leave my job and how I was going to be focused on these things. And that shifted a little, but it's still there. And, you know, the parents always like, are you sure? Like, you know, you've got a good thing. You make a lot of money. Like, yeah, it's rough. Like, I get paid a lot for my job. But I knew my wife was on board when she finally gave this answer, because it's the answer so many people need to hear. Well, if it doesn't work, he can always go back to being a CFO. It's not like we don't have, you know, like, hey, Mike, if this whole thing didn't work, it's not like you couldn't still be in the mortgage business. Like, you did that for how many years, right? Like, there's always a path back. You might not want it. You might not. It's an ego hit. But there's always like, hey, I can do tomorrow what I'm doing today. So why not take a flyer on yourself? Why not take a bet? And as soon as my wife said that to them, I realized she's in. She's on board.
That's been... I'll take it a step further. I watched the show. You're my age. Well, I'm 47, but nonetheless, you remember the movie Cocktail, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So I watched that in college. I dropped out of college because of that movie. I went into the restaurant business and all that. But like, I always think, what's the worst case? Like, I got to go live in a shack in a Caribbean island and bartend. Yeah, and that's what I do. Like, that's the worst case scenario. So let's roll, man. Let's roll. Like, I freaking love this, man. This is like, well, you're one of the most aligned people that I've ever met, like with what the same things that I've been going through and all. And now let me take a step back on the alcoholism for a second. So, yeah, you know, I grew up around a lot of brokenness myself, right? Alcohol, drugs, overdosing on prescription medication, suicide, you name it, abuse. And I've seen it all. And I've seen, you know, I've lost people from suicide, from fentanyl recently, family members. And, you know, and I went down a road. When I was about 18, when I finally got to college, I didn't drink until like after my senior year in high school. party and all that. Did you ever get caught up in the alcoholism or partying, or still fight that now yourself since your dad was?
Yeah, it's in the bloodline, right? I'm going to blame it on the Irish genetics. Lineage. My grandfather died of cirrhosis. My father was an alcoholic. I would say a fair number of other members in the family were as well. I won't get too deep. That's not fair to them, but it definitely runs in the bloodline. And I would say something I've noticed in myself, Mike, is I have no on off button. And I think when I talked to my dad about it, he said that was always his problem too. The moment he cracked a beer, it was game on. Like, there was no, I'm going to have a casual beer. It's like, all right, well, I started, I'm going to go, right? I'm going until I reach the other side, the oblivion, right? Like, I wiped out worrying about this or worrying, like, it's self-medicating, right? He's never been medicated. He's never, realized that he deals with like anxiety or other things. And so did I deal with it? Yeah, for sure. And never to the point where it got in the way of life. Like, I would never label myself an alcoholic. I would never say I was a functional alcoholic. My wife doesn't drink at all. And so generally for most of my life, there was no drinking during the week. I'd have drinks on the weekend, but I would never have casual drinks. I would never have one or two and be like, it'd be like, all right, like, let's have fun. And fun to me was going pretty hard. And it was during COVID, actually. You know, we always joke that first year of COVID, everybody was like, I'm going to live my best life ever. I got into the best shape. I like have a home gym. I was like, I set my deadlift record, bench, like, you know, got my total over 1,000. I was jacked. And then 2021 was, I'm just going to get blitzed, right? It was like, is this thing over yet? Because I'm going to drink my way to the other side of it. And I'd never touched hard alcohol in my life. All of a sudden I was drinking hard alcohol like all the time. And I was like, what's happening? And so I would always set rules for myself, you know, like, I'm not going to drink during the week, or I'm only going to drink when I'm out at dinner with friends. And my wife had a chat with me 2 years ago, right now, actually, and said, hey, look, you know, you're a on-off switch guy. You're not a moderator. You're not a dimmer switch. Like, that's the line you've always used for yourself. Why don't you just press the off button? And so I haven't drank for 2 years. Like, I haven't touched a sip of alcohol. I cut it out. I was like, yeah, good point. I stopped that day. Okay. And oh man. 8 months later, I was having a chat with my youngest son, and he was like, hey dad, you know, when did you stop drinking? And I was like, 8 months ago, something along those lines. And he goes, good, you've been a better dad since you stopped.
Wow.
And I was like, oh shit. Like, he hit me right in the feels, you know. And I look back and I would say, when I was growing up, I have a different impression of my father than my sister does, who's 4 years older than me. So he stopped when I was 10. So my memories are him coaching baseball, him coaching hockey, him being there, him not drinking, like him being very involved in my life. She was already 14. Her memories are what he missed. Her memories are him drinking. Her memories aren't him being the sober dad, the dad who was there. And so, you know, even though it didn't ever get to the level it was for him, for my youngest son to say that when he's, at the time he was 10, that means I stopped drinking for him the same time my dad stopped with me.
Yeah.
And so I know he'll never really remember that side. His older brother's only 2 years old, 3 years older than him. So he's more like his sister. I don't think I missed much of his life. I don't think I was, but I know I'm a better dad to them now than I was. So
good stuff, long answer
to that one, Mike. But yeah, I mean, I think if I had not stopped, then eventually it would have become a problem.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, man. You know, that I hope somebody listening right now, that hits them. You know, I've been a 1 to 3 drink a week guy for like 3 years now. And because I love the taste of spicy margaritas, a glass of red wine, you know, the deal.
But yeah, red wine. That's
Four weeks ago, I went to LA for a trip from some meetings and to work on myself and podcasting. And during that trip, I didn't drink anything. And I went on the streak now where I haven't drank anything in the last 4 weeks. We're going to Jamaica tomorrow to an all inclusive. And I was having this, you know, talk with myself at the gym this morning. I'm like, why even bother? I got this streak going now and I don't have a problem with it now, but nonetheless, like, why even introduce it again? And just, you know, and I'm a big guy on mocktails now. Like, you can make mocktails that taste kind of like drinks and I know how to have fun without it. So it's like, yeah, you great point there. And I think we want to be the best versions of ourselves, the best for our kids and those around us and those that we're serving. So, and some of the most successful people don't drink. You know, you think about that and they put their energy into the places that's going to like up level them, and drinking always pulls you back. I mean, you know, 100%. You can still, yeah. So anyway, thank you for sharing that, man. Can I add one point
to that?
Sure,
because the April 2022 was when things really started to take off. Twitter, podcast, everything. My vision for where life was going, the direction, in almost every measurable area of my life, that was when things blew up. Coincidentally, that was also the month I stopped drinking. I mean, you know, high correlation, but one of the biggest things is just I haven't been fuzzy. I haven't lost time to the during the drinking and then the fuzziness the next morning. Because when people ask me what's the biggest benefit is no lost time.
And clarity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. All right. So as we wind down here, I want to talk about the growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Twitter, the newsletter. Can you take us through the journey of that? Like the decision to start and then not seeing it right away and then how the flywheel effect took effect.
Yeah. The flywheel is exactly how I like to describe it, because when I started with the podcast and you know, you're in the business. It's very hard to grow a podcast. So generally you grow the podcast by getting in front of people, generally through social media, and then they see you, you grow the podcast, you get access to better guests. They come on the show, you write about it, you share it on Instagram, you share it on other social media platforms, and it just starts to spin. And so my whole theory was, if I can grow on social, I'm going to get access to guests. That access is going to give me better content to share, and that wheel will just keep spinning. Early, it was going to be Instagram, but all the shareholders at work started to follow me on Instagram, Mike, and, you know, poke a little fun and mock a little. So I was like, oh, this isn't fun. But where aren't these guys? None of them were on Twitter. So I quickly whipped up a Twitter handle. You know, I had one from back in the day when I was a blogger, resurrected it, cleaned it up a little. Biggest regret is not starting from scratch, but, you know, small detail. And got going and just started writing. And you take that fire and you take the energy that I see in you, and I'm the same way, is saying, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm really going to do it. So taking courses, learning from others, following larger accounts and saying, what are they doing that I need to do? And just taking what they were doing, investing in myself, growing the network. And we started to do, that was August 2021 when I said, okay, we're going to take this seriously. Over the next 4 months, it was slow, but we were adding a couple hundred, and then it starts to, then you add 200, then you add 400. And going into January 2022, we crossed the 10,000 mark. And I thought, holy shit, like now people are saying yes to the show and like, we're something. And then what I noticed at the time, it doesn't work as much now, but on Twitter, they had this concept of things that they called threads. And it was, you write a killer hook and then you tell a little bit of a story over like 10 to 12 tweets. And you see them on Instagram with people who take their Twitter thread and they make it the little canvas and share it. Like Dan Goh has very good ones that he does in the fitness world. And so I took a course on how to write them. And you know, you mentioned streaks earlier. I said, I'm going to write a thread every day for X number of days. It ended up being about 77 days in a row that I wrote them. And March, the first time I wrote them, was the first month So you know how we said you added 100 followers, then 200, then 300, then 400. What I noticed there was the number of followers we were adding per month was accelerating every single month, which eventually leads to exponential growth. March, that month that I started that thread streak, was the first month where the growth slowed. So there was still growth, but it was slower than the prior month. And I thought, oh shit, am I doing something wrong? But what you talked about earlier is if you know that's the path to growth that everyone's following, you just keep going because you know you're going to get better. You just sucked to start with. Fast forward to April of that month, I would say my thread game was much better. The rules that I was following, the way I was thinking, and we added in that month 20,000 followers from the writing. And then we added about 20,000 followers per month on average for the next 2 years. It just went, it just became this, like I knew how the algo worked and I could make magic and print magic. It doesn't really help relative to what I want to do now, but being a CFO, I love Microsoft Excel. At one point I wrote a thread on Microsoft Excel, and I think it was seen 60 million times.
Wow.
And we added 50,000 followers that weekend. Like it was something stupid, right? And that was the first time I learned dopamine can be a little too much, and I need to just go for a walk and put the phone away. But that, you know, that's gone away a little because they've changed the algo, they're prioritizing video. And so I have a plan for how to deal with that once I'm done my contract at work and I have an extra 20 hours a week is how to prioritize video, how to use that video on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and to drive Twitter. So there's a lot of work that's going to go into that. Really what it's been, what I've learned is on every one of these platforms, there's an algorithm. And the algorithm changes. And so the more you can surround yourself with other people who study the algorithm on that platform and have conversations around it. I don't know if you've ever come across the account Save Your Sons. He's mm-hmm. on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok. A guy named Harrison, super great guy, has a really ambitious mission of basically someday replacing Disney with a more based Disney. And which I just love the audacity of the vision. And I've never seen someone who studies how content works more than him. And he's just like, he's so clutch in the way he knows what resonates. And it's the combo of he's not just going to put out shit that resonates. He puts out what he believes in a way that resonates. Mm-hmm. And he knows like, if my TikTok video, if I can get people to watch for 27 seconds, then I'm going to go viral. And so those 27 seconds have to be, and just like that level of diligence, right? Every single post, what worked, what didn't work, how am I going to make it better? And so just doing that, and I've fallen off that game as I've tried to start building some businesses behind the scenes. I got to get back on it in the next month, Mike. That's awesome. Been the growth journey.
Awesome.
And
love it.
You know, slow, steady, exponential.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people quit before that. So,
yeah.
All right. That fire needs to keep burning. All right. Finally, as we wrapped up here, you know, look, dude, we ran way over and that's okay. I hope you're okay with it. It's okay with me. Awesome conversation. Newsletter. Let's wrap up with newsletter. What's the deal with newsletter? How did you get the 20,000 on that? Did that come from Twitter? And I'm hearing a lot about newsletters now. And seeing a lot about newsletters. Is that something everybody should be leaning into too?
Yeah, the interesting thing with newsletters is it's one of the rare ways you can own your audience. So what they all point out to us, you know, we're big on different social media platforms, you and I, but having that social following is great. But the problem is when the algo changes and all of a sudden your reach goes from, hey, I'm reaching lots of people to I'm reaching no one, or they ban your account, and you're like, shit, I just lost my income. But you own your email list. And generally the people that are on it are pretty devoted. So the recommendation is that everybody captures emails from their audience and you keep them warm in various ways. We crossed 26,000 now. So we're up to 26,000 and we send out a weekly newsletter. And I would say over the last 3 weeks, we're really starting to see replies and conversations with the audience. And so that tells me we're on to something, Mike. And what that eventually means is the ability to launch courses to your newsletter. If I'm starting a real estate development company and I have a company that offers a syndication program, and I've got some groups I'm going to talk to about that, that gives my audience an opportunity to invest with me. So if I'm saying, hey, my goal is to help you grow personally, professionally, and financially, and one of those financial ways is I'm in real estate development, I can share with you what that looks like. I can talk about it on TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and I can show you a path to invest, and I can talk about it in my newsletter. Now people are like, hey, I can invest right alongside you. I know what you've done. I know what you do. I have an understanding of your character, of who you are. I want to invest with you. Now here's an avenue to do it. And I can share that across the newsletter. So I look at that as a massive win. Now the downside is the podcast is slowed down tremendously because all social used to point you to the podcast. So it would grow 20% month over month. Now all content points to the newsletter. So it grows every month and you're not guiding them to the podcast. So it slows down. Eventually, when the newsletter gets large enough and you drive them to the podcast, it'll pick back up. But you generally can only drive to one thing. And right now I've prioritized the newsletter.
Gotcha. All right. Listen, this episode has been jam-packed with info for you all to take at least one thing and implement. Don't just take it, listen, and say, oh, that's a good idea, and not do anything with it. Implement one thing. Just chip away. Get started. Clint, thank you so much for being here, man.
Thanks. That was a blast. Thanks, Mike.
Awesome stuff, dude. Awesome stuff. Hang tight while I wrap this up. Guys, listen, you know, you've been with me for a while. Keep subscribing, making sure you're telling people about this, liking, comment, and whatever it is that you can do to help us. We really appreciate it. I always have no problems asking for help as we grow and continue to grow to impact people and remind people that they're unstoppable to live in the life of their dreams. It's your boy C-Rock in That One Studio signing off on the What Are You Made Of Show. Until next time, be that one. Oh, by the way, before hold on a second. I want to make sure that people know where to find you. Where's the best place besides, is it X, Twitter, or is it your website? Where do you want to send people? I'm sorry. I want to make sure I get this in.
Yeah, let's do the website, thegrowth.guide. Thegrowth.guide.
Thegrowth.guide. Guys, go check it out. Now, be that one. Music.